morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, January the 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. China's foreign minister on a visit to Kenya says that Beijing will soon appoint a special envoy for the Horn of Africa.
We have an economic race within the region, and Kenya is just the gateway to Horn of Africa and gateway to East Africa.
And after multiple delays due to poor preparation and the global COVID-19 pandemic, the 33rd edition of Africa's top soccer tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations, kicks off this weekend in Cameroon.
Without doubt, this is our continental showpiece, just like Europe has a European Championship, South America has a Copa America, North America as well have got their own tournament, Asia have got the Asia Cup. So this is ours for Africa.
Sports commentator and analyst Jonah Yakutaga. More with him ahead in the show. And Tanzania's parliamentary speaker has resigned after falling out with the country's president over differences about the nation's debt. We'll have these stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And for our top story, after multiple delays due to poor preparation and the global COVID-19 pandemic, the 33rd edition of Africa's top soccer tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations, kicks off this weekend in Cameroon. The tournament will feature 24 African countries represented by some of the best soccer players in the world competing for the trophy. The opening match on Sunday will pit host Cameroon's national team, the Indomitable Lions, against Burkina Faso's Stallions at Yaoundé's Olembe Stadium. We reported earlier this week that authorities in Cameroon say that thousands of people in the country had already gotten the COVID-19 vaccine and would therefore be able to attend the matches in person if they present a negative test at the stadiums. Jonah Yakutaga is a sports analyst and commentator. He joins me via phone from Kampala, Uganda, to break down the group matchups. But first, he explains why this is AFCON 2021 being played in 2022.
The tournament was supposed to have been played last year in 2021. But because of the COVID situation all over the globe, it was pushed to January 2022. So the tournament is being played in 2022, but it will still be called AFCON 2021. It's a little bit similar to the Euros in Europe, which is equivalent of the Africa Cup of Nations in Africa. The Euros as well were played last year in 2021, but they were called the Euros 2020 because it was slated for 2020. But because, again, because of COVID, the tournament was pushed to the following year. So better late than never. We'll still have the tournament this year.
What kind of excitement is there on the continent about AFCON 2021?
Without doubt, this is our continental showpiece, just like Europe has a European Championship, South America has a Copa America, North America as well have got their own tournament, Asia have got the Asia Cup. So this is ours for Africa. But sadly for me, as a sports journalist looking in from the inside, if you like, or from the outside, depending on which side you are on, it's been a bit disappointing. I think for me, it was kicked off by the comments that were attributed to Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool coach, in an interview before a Champions League game, and he said he referred to the Africa Cup of Nations as this little tournament that will be starting in Africa. And one of the Nigerian journalists, I think it was Ojora Babatunde, who picked up on it in the following press conference and asked him, listen, you owe Africa an apology. How could you refer to our continental tournament as a little tournament? Now, he tried to downplay it, Klopp, that is, and he said, listen, I don't downplay this tournament. It was just taken out of context. And then a few days later, we saw more comments from former footballers, former Arsenal players, Ian Wright and Patrick Vieira. We all know Patrick Vieira, of course, with his Senegal roots. He came out and said, listen, this tournament has got to be respected. It's as big as the Euros. And he came out and said, listen, I will not be stopping any of my players from going to the Africa Cup of Nations. There was also a small incident in Holland where Sebastian Haller, who will be playing for Ivory Coast, he's been a star player in the European Champions League, scoring 10 goals and 2 assists in 6 games. He's been one of the big players in the Champions League this season for Ajax. And he was asked by a journalist if he would be honoring the call-up for Ivory Coast. And he said, listen, why do you ask us such a question? We will be going to represent our country. So for me, the build-up has been overshadowed by what looks like a systematic attempt to downplay the significance of the Africa Cup of Nations.
Let's get into the breakdown of the groups that are going to play. How many groups are there and what are some of the teams that are in there that we should look forward to?
All right, there are six groups. Group A, of course, will be having the host nation, Cameroon, with Burkina Faso, Cape Verde, and Ethiopia. Group B will have Senegal, Zimbabwe, Guinea, and Malawi. A quick one on Guinea. Guinea have a new president, the Colonel, President Doumbia, who overthrew the government a few months back. Okay. And he's given his team an ultimatum that they've got to go out and win the Africa Cup of Nations or come back and refund every penny that has been invested into this team.
No pressure.
No pressure whatsoever. And this is a team that has Naby Keita, who plays for Liverpool. I've got Amadou Diawara, who plays for AS Roma. So it's quite a team that's decent, but for me, not good enough to win the title. So indeed, no pressure there. Then Group C has got Morocco, Ghana, Comoros, and Gabon. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's Gabon. He's no longer Arsenal captain, but he is still captaining that Gabon team. I don't expect them to go any far in that tournament, probably as far as they could get out of the group, but I don't see them going beyond the round of 16. Group D has got Nigeria, has got Egypt, has got Guinea-Bissau, has got Sudan. Okay. Group E will have Algeria, Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea, and Sierra Leone. And then finally, Group F will have Tunisia, Mali, Mauritania, and the Gambia.
How did the European clubs react to losing their players to the tournament?
Not happy. You look at a team like Watford, for example. They are struggling in the Premier League. They're in the bottom three. They're fighting relegation. They could be relegated to the Championship. And two of their star players are Ismail Sarr, who plays for Senegal, and Emmanuel Dennis, who plays for Nigeria. So what Watford did, they refused to release Emmanuel Dennis to the Nigerian team, and they simply told FIFA that the invitation for this player has come in late. Now, what happens is the national teams are supposed to write to these clubs and inform them that we'll be taking our players for this period of time. Now, if an invitation comes in late, the club has obligation or has a right to say not releasing a player. So they exercise their right because Emmanuel Dennis has been one of their key players, if not their star man this season. So they refuse to release him, and Nigeria lose out massively without this guy because he's been scoring plenty of goals. I think he's got 8 Premier League goals already for a team that's in the bottom three. That's how good he is. Ismail Sarr, on the other hand, got injured in November. So Watford said, we will not be releasing this player. But FIFA rules stipulate that if a player is injured, the club should release this player to go to his country, and his country's doctors will do their own tests to confirm if indeed this player is injured. So Senegal insisted and told FIFA, we want him to travel and we do our own checks. And eventually Watford gave in and the player was allowed to fly out to the Africa Cup of Nations. And I think he will be taking part for Senegal, at least later on in the tournament.
That was Jonah Byakutaga, a sports analyst and commentator. I reached him via phone from Kampala, Uganda. China's foreign minister Wang Yi has announced that Beijing will soon appoint a special envoy for the Horn of Africa. Wang's announcement during a visit to Kenya on Thursday comes as the U.S. envoy to the Horn arrives in Ethiopia, which has struggled with over a year of war. The region has also seen setbacks from a coup in Sudan and an election standoff in Somalia. Mohammed Yusuf has more.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi met with President Uhuru Kenyatta in Nairobi to discuss trade, infrastructure projects, Kenya's debt, and the security situation in the Horn of Africa. Kenyan diplomacy and international relations expert Kizito Sabala says the foreign minister is mainly looking out for his country's interest in Kenya.
China does not care what other people say, what other countries say, so long as it takes or so long as the existing regime listens to it. And therefore, in my view, this visit is just meant to enhance Kenya-Chinese relations, of course, being really in favor of China.
According to Kenya's central bank, Chinese money accounts for 2/3 of Kenya's external debt, which has worried economists and the public. Kenya borrowed $50 billion to fund its infrastructure projects in the past few years, and some fear the country's Mombasa port could be given to China to operate if the country defaults on its loans repayment. Wang Yi is expected to visit the port during his visit. Gerishon Ikiara is an international economic affairs lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He questions whether China has more room to negotiate the restructuring of debt.
Now, whether China has any room for reducing it is not very clear. Obviously, it may also consider the implications, because China also is operating on a commercial basis as much as possible. So they will have to weigh those issues of how much concessional measures you can make without necessarily hurting the financial institutions.
Following the global COVID-19 pandemic, which hit African economies, China suspended debt service temporarily, allowing African countries not to pay interest to the borrowed money. In Dakar, Senegal, at the 8th Ministerial Conference of the Forum for China-Africa Cooperation, China pledged to allow African goods worth $300 billion into the country and promised another $10 billion in trade finance to the continent's exports. Sabala says China projects cannot help Kenya develop faster economically.
China being at the level where it is in terms of a very advanced economy, still Kenya relies very much on importing a lot of things from China. That is where the disparity is. Until Kenya begins to export a lot of goods or services to China. And you see, for example, when we get the loans and we invest in the infrastructure, it means really we are not investing in the productive sector that will begin to give results immediately. Infrastructure is very good. It is going to be a long-term investment, but in terms of balancing the trade and so on, it's not going to do that.
Nasongo Miliro teaches international relations at the Technical University in Kenya. He says China is using his country to get to Eastern Africa for economic and security gains.
We have an economic race within the region, and Kenya is just the gateway to Horn of Africa and gateway to East Africa. When Ethiopia was stable, actually Ethiopia was being used. Ethiopia is a child of the Chinese model of trade and military extension.
China's foreign minister will remain in Kenya until Thursday, then wrap up his trip in Comoros on Friday. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. The Speaker of Tanzania's Parliament has resigned after complaining about the country's mounting external debt. Job Ndugai said in a statement that he had taken the decision to leave his position in the interest of the country and his ruling Chama Cha Mapinduzi CCM party. You're listening to Daybreak Africa. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Daybreak Africa continues. Ethiopia's government has dismissed a Human Rights Watch report that says authorities illegally detained, abused, and caused the forced disappearance of thousands of ethnic Tigrayans that were repatriated from Saudi Arabia. Gelmo Dawit reports from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs on Thursday lashed out at the Human Rights Watch report that accuses the state of targeting ethnic Tigrayans recently repatriated from Saudi Arabia. The rights group's report accused authorities of detaining, abusing, and causing thousands of Tigrayans to effectively vanish in a sweep against illegal migrants. Ministry spokesman Dina Muthi called the report unsubstantiated and an irresponsible move that aimed to discredit the government's effort to help citizens returned by Saudi authorities. We have repatriated more than 40,000 Ethiopians from Saudi Arabia in just a couple of months, regardless of which ethnic group that they belong to, Mufti said according to a transcript of the briefing. Ethiopia in January 2021 announced it had agreed with Saudi Arabia to repatriate 40,000 of its citizens detained in the country at a rate of 1,000 per day. Human Rights Watch reports Wednesday said 40% of returnees from November 2020 to June 2021 were Tigrayans. The report said from June to July, Saudi Arabia deported more than 30,000 Ethiopian citizens just as authorities were targeting ethnic Tigrayans. The group's refugee and migrant rights researcher Nadia Herdman said the Tigrayan returnees were detained in various parts of Ethiopia, beaten and subjected to forced labor. Ethiopian authorities are prosecuting Tigrayans deported from Saudi Arabia by wrongfully detaining and forcibly disappearing them, Herdman said. Saudi Arabia should stop contributing to this abuse by ending the forced return of Tigrayans to Ethiopia and allowing them to seek asylum or resettlement in third countries. The rights groups also call on Ethiopian authorities to immediately release detained migrants and to stop profiling ethnic Tigrayans. The report was based on interviews Human Rights Watch conducted with 23 alleged victims of the abuse. Since the war broke out in November 2020, between Ethiopian federal authorities and those in Tigray region, the government has denied discriminating against or targeting ethnic Tigrayans. But reports from inside Ethiopia indicate authorities have subjected ethnic Tigrayans to arbitrary detentions, dismissal from official positions, and travel restrictions. Ethiopian government spokesperson Legese Tulu told Reuters news agency there was no ethnic-based prison facilities or places for deportees from other countries, but he acknowledged many Ethiopians were detained on suspicion of aiding what he called terrorists, the Ethiopian government terms for the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The TPLF have long ruled the Tigray region and run the federal government for 3 decades until they were ousted from power in 2018. Foreign Ministry spokesman Mufti on Thursday said Ethiopia plans to send a committee of officials, religious leaders, and other stakeholders to Saudi Arabia to discuss measures for its citizens who remain in detention. Galmudait for VOA News, Addis Ababa. Voice of America.
Workers in Uganda have welcomed a new law that allows them to access 20% of their social security savings. The law was signed this week by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. From Kampala, Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports that workers say that the funds will help them cope with the challenges brought about by the effects of COVID-19.
Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni signed the law that provides, among others, workers aged 45 years and above and have worked for at least 10 years access to up to 20% of their national social security fund savings. Betty Amongi is Uganda's Minister of Gender and Labour.
I want to extend appreciation to His Excellency the President for the guidance that he rendered to us throughout the process of amending this act and also for assenting to the act in a timely manner, especially at a time when many workers are struggling to make ends meet due to effects of COVID-19 pandemic. I've already seen on my Twitter tags from workers talking about a gift for school fees and others.
The new law also grants access to funds for workers who have become physically incapacitated due to illness or accident and have worked for 10 years if they are aged 40 years and above. In this category, workers are allowed to withdraw up to 50% of their savings. Amongi says the National Social Security Fund, or NSSF, has allocated some 900 billion Uganda shillings, or about $254 million, to benefit about 100,000 eligible workers. Asha Wilson Owere, the chairman of the National Organization of Trade Unions, or NOTU, says the new law is timely. He says the money will help workers to cope with the challenges brought about as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Owere says more people will now be motivated to serve with the National Security Fund.
Out of 14 million people, million workers in Uganda, only 2.1 million are saving with NSSF. So this law is opening up for even those in the informal sector to be saving with NSSF for their retirement, for their old age. So it is going to help those who are in COVID. It will help them to cope with the challenges.
Father of six, Philip Nsekanabo, who works with the Minister of Energy, says he's glad the law has been signed. The 46-year-old says he requests for his 20% savings so he can pay for his children's school fees and invest part of it to earn extra money to supplement his salary.
Anytime I'm waiting for the procedures to access my money so that I use it within this year. Being that our economy had gone down because of this pandemic, I want to at least to do some personal businesses, because the moment we saw what happened during this period of the pandemic, I want to utilize this money at least in personal business.
Minister Amongi encourages workers to use their savings for investment rather than spending it for luxury. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and with that, we go to Abuja, Nigeria, with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We are 3 days away from the opening game of the 33rd edition of the CAF African Cup of Nations. While Cameroon, the host nation, is putting finishing touches on its preparations, the harsh realities of hosting the tournament in the pandemic era is beginning to take its toll on teams participating in the tournament. Burkina Faso left three players still isolating in Abu Dhabi before arriving in Yaoundé to face Cameroon in Sunday's tournament opener. Isiofu Dayo, Dramani Nikiema, and Kilian Nikiema will be allowed to travel after they return negative tests and are almost certain to miss Sunday's match, according to officials. Malawi left for Cameroon on Wednesday, but also left three players behind in isolation. Defender Mark Fodia, midfielder Charles Petro, and striker Richard Mbulu stayed in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. They are scheduled to travel on Friday, a football association statement said. Doubleton Gambia, currently preparing in Qatar, cancelled their two warm-up matches against Algeria and Syria on Wednesday due to the unavailability of 16 of their 28 players. Gambia's coach Tom Senfeld refuted the insinuations that the players contracted COVID in Qatar.
The people who were last week, Thursday, testing positive were all infected outside Qatar. Everyone, as I said already earlier, got or infected in Italy or got at this moment of time infected in Gambia, where the majority of the people got infected.
Dr. Eric Tandy, a public health expert in Cameroon, told local media what safeguards are being put in place around the various team hotels to control the spread of the virus.
It should be said here that within Cameroon, we respect what we call barrier measures in totality. And again, for the delegations that are arriving in Cameroon, each and every one should be able to show proof of a vaccination card and also a COVID-19 negative test, being it using PCR or RDT, that is being confirmed with it within our port of entry.
Staying with the impact of COVID-19 on preparations for the African Cup of Nations, stadium at this month's African Cup of Nations in Cameroon will have their capacity capped at 80% for the host matches due to the coronavirus pandemic. CAF has also announced that all the fixtures in the competition will only be played in front of 60% of the ground's capacity. Strict coronavirus regulations have already been put in place for the tournament, postponed from last year due to the virus. Spectators must be vaccinated and are expected to present a negative test before being granted entry into matches. Three-time African champions, the Super Eagles of Nigeria, on Wednesday arrived Garoua, venue of their Group D African Cup of Nations matches, with a total of 25 players. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Yaoundé, Cameroon. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.